that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond, and this is episode 410, and I'm your host, Allison Sheridan. I am joined today by Twin Lakes Images' very own Mark Poley. How are you doing today, Mark?
Good, Allison. Thank you for having me on the show. It just feels so good to help you break in a new show.
Even though some people say it's not new, it feels new because it's twice as much work. But I wanted to have you on the show, not just because of how much you tease me in public, but because I'm a big admirer of your photography. And you've been on Bart's show, Let's Talk Photography, several times recently. And I wanted to get you on to talk about how you take pictures in a place everybody else has already been and yet come out with something truly unique. We're going to get into some of the photographs you took recently, but wanted to kind of dive into how do you do that? How do you make something magical that everybody else took a picture of and it didn't look exciting when everybody else did it? So maybe give us a little background. What is Twin Lakes Images?
Twin Lakes Images is my business persona. I started shooting kind of seriously about 5 years ago after I got a DSLR and switched over to the Mac and started feeling creative and working with other creatives like Victor and Bart in particular. Steve Stanger early on were sort of pushing me down the photography road. So
Victor Kahiao, you're talking about? Yeah, they're like pushers, really.
Yeah, they really are. They help me spend money. I think that's what they were trying to do. But
enablers.
But, yeah, you know, it's disguised as, oh, look at these pictures you can do. But, oh, by the way, you need to go buy this thing. And so we spent a lot of time at a vacation place called Twin Lakes. And I would get up really early in the morning and I'd go out shooting. And that was sort of when I really started doing the serious shooting and eventually was selling some postcards to the local resorts over there. So I said, I should really figure out a way that people can find these. So that's sort of how I generated Twin Lakes Images. And from there, I've, you know, generated a lot of other different kinds of images and shooting in lots of different places and just kept it as a sort of as a business name.
I like it. Yeah. In case anybody's trying to figure out who this actually is on the horn today, this is Switcher Mark. You may have known him as, but you recently changed your persona to TLI underscore Mark for Twin Lakes Images, right?
Twin Lakes Images. I started Switcher Mark. Was it 7 or 8 years ago or whatever it was? And that's what got used everywhere. And that's what everybody knew me as. And for years, I've been wanting to jettison it, but couldn't really think of how I would do it and have people know who I was or find me. And
so we can just refer to you as the artist formerly known as Switcher Mark.
As Switcher Mark. Yeah. TLI Mark is a lot shorter to type.
Too, so. Don't forget the underscore though.
Unfortunately, I have to have an underscore because somebody else has TLI Mark.
All right. Well, enough about the naming. One of the things you're known for is your photographs of tulips as well. And this is kind of what got me into thinking about how many people go see the tulips up. You're in the Washington area, right?
Right. I'm up in Washington in Mount Vernon area, Skagit County. They have an annual tulip festival. And I don't really know the numbers, but it's probably hundreds of thousands of people every year come into the valley during the month of April and look at the pictures. And look at the tulips and take the pictures. Thank you for correcting me. I knew that you would do that. Look at the tulips and take pictures. And everybody has a camera. Everybody takes pictures. And, you know, professional photographers have been coming up there for ages. And, you know, you can't go anywhere without seeing postcards or pictures or posters or whatever of the tulips. So it's challenging to go and feel like you've actually done something unique.
Right. I always look at this one set of photos. My daughter and I bought her a Nikon D40 because I had a Nikon D40 because Bart made me get one. And we had the same lens on our cameras and we were taking pictures together down to the beach. And we got back and I looked at my pictures and they were snapshots. And I looked at hers and hers were art. And I figured I probably just don't even need to try. There's no point in trying to learn how to do this because clearly she is born with some artistic talent and vision of how to take these photos and not have them look like snapshots. So your goal here is to convince me otherwise that it is possible to learn.
It is possible. I've written about this and talked about this a couple different times in preparing for our recording today. I was thinking about it and there's a long description of how to take photographs where everybody else has taken photographs and make them look unique. And then I looked at sort of a summary of what my tips were and thought, oh, I know what the key is. The key is to think like a photographer and not like a tourist.
Huh. Okay.
And I just, without getting to the specific tips, what I mean by that is really take, when you're at a tourist spot, it's really easy to sort of be overwhelmed by the entire event, by the entire scene, by everything that's there. And when you think like a photographer, it is stepping back from that and sort of going to the things that you know about photography that might help you, and whether that's unique composition or taking advantage of the lighting or taking advantage of something unique about the situation, all of those things. But you really have to, I think, get into the mindset of thinking like a photographer.
Because it's
really easy to just go there and take a picture of that thing, and it's going to turn out like a snapshot. But if you want to, and for me, the difference between a snapshot and a photograph is that the photograph is going to tell a story. It's going to convey something about the emotion or something unique about the situation. And that takes a little bit of extra thought and a little bit of extra effort. And I think that's what these tips are.
I think I succeeded at that once. We were in, I want to say it was New Caledonia on our cruise from Australia to New Caledonia. And we were going by some, I don't know, amazing island or something. I forget what it was we were even looking at, because that's what's important is every single person on the ship was looking at this thing, this island, I think it was, and every single person was taking a picture of it. So I turned around and I took a picture of them.
The people told, taking the picture.
Yeah, because it told a different story. Now, you'll notice I don't remember what we were looking at, but I got this interesting shot of how engrossed everyone was in photographing the thing, and that was much more interesting than the thing itself to me. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, and you probably have pictures of the island, but that one picture that you took when you turned around and saw something different, that's the one that sticks out for you. Is that right?
Right.
And that's exactly what I'm saying, because, what got you and I talking about this was a recent trip. I just got back from Niagara Falls. And
which really confused me, because I kept trying to convince Steve that those pictures were in Washington. But the bigger and bigger the pictures of the falls got, I'm going, I don't know my geography, but I don't remember anything that big being in Washington.
Yeah. Wrong coast. Wrong side of the world, or wrong side of the country. Yeah. So I was there for a business trip. But as is always the case, I take my camera and I leave the business meetings and I go take pictures. Yes. I don't even remember. Don't tell anybody, but I don't remember the meeting. I just remember going on taking the pictures. Yeah.
Nice.
That was, what an experience. So, I mean, literally one of the seven wonders of the world. And when you walk there, you're just absolutely, have you ever been there?
No, I haven't.
So it really is, and I know, you know, your trip to India and so forth, you saw Taj Mahal, right? So,
right.
It's overwhelming. I mean, how big it is, the sound and everything is just really overwhelming. But all of the vantage points are really controlled. This was in October, and there were still, you know, thousands of people there, even early in the morning. And everybody has a camera, or a selfie stick, which is really disturbing. And everybody's crowding into the same area to take pictures. And when I first got, you know, I took my camera with me, knowing I was going to be in a cool place. And when I first got there, just sort of started snapping away, like everybody else, and
got nothing memorable, I'm sure, from those.
I guess I got my tourist photos, right?
Okay, because
being there, you know, you take the pictures to maybe remind yourself of the area. But I like to accomplish something where I really want to share it with people, and you know, post it on Flickr or whatever, and really share it, and that requires some extra work, I think, and to do something unique. And that's when I really got thinking about this again, is like, well, what the heck are you going to do? Because the falls are just gigantic. and there's people everywhere, and you know, almost every picture you think you're going to take, somebody gets in the way or whatever. So it is challenging.
I would be thinking wide angle lens, panorama, something like that to make it pop, which by the way, I never do anything with any panoramas I ever take. I always think they're going to be neato when I get home, and they're kind of a big yawn when I get back.
I didn't have my wide angle lens with me.
How about your circular polarizing filter?
I also didn't take my circular polarizing filter. And the wide angle lens was intentional. I didn't want to carry it. The polarizing filter was accidental. I just forgot to grab it.
I should tell everybody else. The first time Mark and I met in person, we were up in San Francisco for Macworld, and we went out to take pictures, and we're basically staring into the sun reflections off the ocean, and Mark had forgotten his CP filter, and I gave him so much heartache about it because I was all snooty that I had mine that Bart made me buy. But then he got the last laugh when we went to Bora Bora and I forgot mine. I mean, every single picture's got ocean in it, right? I mean, there's blue skies and ocean.
Ocean and blue. And yesterday,
as I recall what you wrote to me, don't worry, it's not like it was the trip of a lifetime or something.
That sounds like me. That sounds like something I would have said. But
so apparently both of us can't remember it.
Yeah. I never leave it on. Unlike some people I know, I generally try to take it off so that I don't leave it on at like in indoor shots. So
I always have it on when I'm at a conference or something like that, and I can't figure out why I can't get a good exposure on stuff.
Why is everything so dark? Yeah. So
every time. Okay. So what lens did you have with you?
I had just my super zoom travel lens. It's a 18-250.
Okay.
So that I can basically. 18 is pretty wide, really.
Sure.
And so I could get a pretty good picture that way. And going 250, you can get a long ways and get in close. So that, okay. I find it to be a really sufficient lens for walking around. And since I knew I didn't want to pack my big bag and stuff, I just threw that in the luggage and didn't have all the extra bibs, all the stuff.
So you've got this huge venue, lots of powerful images in your head of what you could capture, and you've got a bunch of people in your way. How do you come away with the photo? Maybe do you want to jump to what photo you did get or how you thought about it?
Well, I will say that I didn't have my wide angle, but I did do a panorama, and I've posted a bunch of pictures that I did from Niagara Falls up on my webpage. But I want to look at one that I did that I think is pretty unique. Not necessarily unique to Niagara Falls, but it's something that I came away with that I really liked.
By the way, someone is going to give you a hard time afterwards for saying pretty unique.
Oh, is it?
Because it's just unique or not unique. I wanted to be the one to do it because somebody was going to do it.
Because somebody was going to do it. It's like being pretty pregnant.
You know? Exactly.
All right, I'm sorry.
Okay.
God, I knew this was going to be torture, but really, I
not this soon in.
I should have got some Novocaine or something before I started. Too early to drink.
All right.
The picture that I shared out and that we'll put in the notes is a picture of a mallard duck sitting on a log, and the log is sitting right on the edge of the waterfall. And the waterfall is done in, I used a slow shutter on the waterfall so that the water is all smooth.
But the duck's not moving. Did you actually get the duck to sit still for the whole time that you did that long exposure?
I yelled out to him, "Hey, duck, hold still."
No, pose.
Actually, I'm going to give away the secret here. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
This is actually two pictures. This is a composite. And that's part of the idea here is thinking a little bit differently. And actually, the way this picture came about is that I took a picture of the duck. Because I thought, hey, that's going to be kind of unique. It looks really interesting. This duck sitting in the middle of this roaring water. And then I started to leave, and I walked away, but I noticed, it's late in the evening. It's really overcast. There's not a lot of light. I haven't really tried anything slow shutter. And like I already said, I wasn't carrying any filters with me. So typically, if you're going to do a slow shutter, like of water or something, you're going to want a neutral density filter, because you're going to leave the shutter open longer, and if it's at all bright, it's going to blow everything out. So,
oh, Yeah, that's what happens to me. I thought I just a neutral density filter is what would have fixed that.
Yep. And I'm not an expert on it. I haven't ever done it really successfully. I have some neutral density filters. I've experimented around with it. I've got some stuff that I like, but it's not a filter that I carry with me. And it's not something that I do all the time, but I thought, oh, what the heck? I have a few minutes and the light seems right. So I switched into manual mode and experimented with the amount of exposure, the amount of shutter speed to until I looked like on the back of the camera, I was getting something that I liked. And I took a few pictures in a different location where the water was running and thought, oh, that's kind of cool. And it was because it worked. So I walked back to where the ducks were. And actually, the ducks had left.
No.
They weren't there anymore, but the log was. And I tried to line myself up the best I could. I couldn't exactly remember where I was standing. And then I took a few slow shutter speed pictures of the water.
So the slow shutter speed picture that I'm looking at right now, it's the log actually looks a little bit blurry, but the waterfall is just this beautiful smooth texture coming behind the little peninsula that's sticking out into the water, and then the water is smoothly falling over the front of it. But the log doesn't look great; it looks a little bit fuzzy.
It's a little bit soft, and that's because I think of the way that it was composited. So, and I don't want to turn this into a big Photoshop lesson. And I'm not an expert at this at all. And people that do Photoshop are going to laugh at me and say, what a stupid way to do that. I'm going to tell you the way I did it.
Well, I do want back up though. You said composited. Yeah. This is a single photo. I thought the one of the rushing water without the duck.
Without the duck. Yes, but it's a the composite is the log and the duck. The log and the duck are pretty much one photo.
Right.
And the rushing water is another photo.
But I'm looking at the one with the rushing water. The log looks soft. The log that ends up getting replaced.
Oh, okay. So you're referring to the rushing... Okay.
Just the shutter speed picture.
Yeah, and so the reason why the log in just the slow shutter speed is kind of blurry is that I didn't have a tripod.
Oh, really? Well, that's what I was kind of trying to walk you into. That is without a tripod. That's handheld.
What I did was I used the railing. There's a rail there, and I set the camera on it. I might have even done a 2-second shutter release timer so that I could push the button and then kind of get myself stable and then let the shutter open. It's soft because the shutter stayed open a while and it's basically handheld.
Okay.
Braced as good as I can.
Got you. Okay. Now I'll let you keep going.
Okay. So, and like I said, it's not a Photoshop lesson, but I'll kind of quickly walk us through how this happened. So I adjusted the images in Lightroom so that they basically matched so that the exposure looked pretty much the same and, the color and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Imported them into Lightroom or into Photoshop as layers, and I put the slow shutter. Let me scroll to my notes
so you don't lie anymore.
So I don't lie anymore than I usually do because I have to remember which the photo that's going to be partially visible is going to be the bottom layer. And the photo that is mostly visible is the top layer. In this case, mostly visible is the slow shutter speed one.
Oh, because you want to erase as little as possible.
Yeah, I want to erase as little as possible. Okay. And the vast majority of the picture is the waterfall, the slow waterfall. The tiny little percentage of photo is the duck. So that's going to go on bottom and the big one's going to go on top. And you reduce the opacity of that top layer to something like 50%. And the reason you do that is so that you can see really clearly see the lower layer below it.
Mm-hmm.
And click on that lower layer, click to the move tool, and move the lower layer to where you want it. And mm-hmm. And how do I know that I've moved it to where I want it? Well, what I was really trying to do was make sure that the logs lined up the best I could. It wasn't perfect because they were taken from slightly different angles.
Right.
So I tried to line it up the best that I could and then now raise the opacity back up. And I knew that I didn't want any of the log from the slow shutter speed. So I erased the edges and I did that with content aware cloning, just kind of get rid of the edges so that it looked like water there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. You got some area around it that's forgiving, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, that gives me a little area to work with. And again, like I said, because I wasn't in exactly the same place, the edges of the logs didn't line up exactly right. If I'd taken these two pictures, you know, if I was on a tripod and took the pictures one right after the other, chances are the logs would have lined up exactly right. But
all of us who are perfect and think of the shot while we're standing in the same spot, raise your hand, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, and I didn't have a tripod. So even if I would have thought of it while I was standing there, the chances of it being exactly the same are minimal, because I didn't have a tripod. So once I got rid of the edges of the log that I knew I didn't want to save, I started working just entirely on the good duck picture. And what I did there was I go to that, I create a layer mask with a white layer. And I know that you've said in the past that layer masks or the idea of masking challenges you. But
yeah,
if you just think of it as a window shade. Okay. I'm trying to think of a better analogy, because what you're really doing is think of it just as a piece of paper on top of the picture.
Okay.
So you've got the picture and you put a piece of white paper on top of the picture. So now I can't see any of the picture.
Okay.
And now I get myself a super eraser that erases the paper away. Not only the ink and stuff, but it makes the paper go away.
Right.
It pokes a hole in the paper.
Right.
So I take a paintbrush that paints black. It's the opposite of white. And I paint a hole in the piece of paper.
That makes sense.
And I can see now through that hole the duck.
Okay.
Can't see the waterfall, can't see the rocks, but I can see the duck. And if I make that hole a little bit bigger, I can see the log that he's sitting on. Now, if what's happening is I'm poking that hole through so that is showing on top of the waterfall.
Yeah, see, this is where I think the analogy in Photoshop, or the way they represent it, throws me for a loop. We all understand conceptually what we're trying to do is we've got the waterfall on top. We actually want to cut a hole in the waterfall picture for the duck to show through below. But what you've just described is cutting the duck out of the layer below, and it really isn't. You're cutting a hole in the top layer so that the duck can show through.
So the good duck is on top.
Oh, you said the good stuff, the thing that was mostly showing would be on the top. Waterfall.
I did say that. So, well, I knew I was going to get confused.
Okay. Well, sorry. I don't want to confuse you too much. But the reason I wanted to poke at the way Photoshop shows this is because using the MacFun Intensify tool, you make a layer of these two photos, and you would literally just... So we've got the waterfall on top, the duck underneath. I would literally just erase around where the duck should be on the top layer. So I'd erase a hole, and I don't have to think about black and white and say layer masking. I just erase where the duck should be on the upper layer, and I can see it by changing the opacity of that layer. I can see both. It's the way they represent it in Photoshop that confuses me. I understand the concept that I've got two layers and I'm erasing one layer to make room for the thing underneath to see the thing underneath. I understand that. It's the way they do it that I can't figure out how to make it go. Does that make any sense?
Yes. And I think that now that I looked at my picture again in photo, because I'm looking at the Photoshop, and now that I've looked at it, I think that I can say my analogy and still make it work.
So, okay, try again.
So what I said to begin with was correct, which is the thing that I want a little bit showing is the bottom layer. So in this case, the good duck is the bottom layer. Top layer is the thing that's going to show the most. Layer mask, I sort of misstated my analogy. Instead of saying a layer mask is a piece of paper on top of that top layer, think of it as turning that top layer into a piece of paper all by itself, and you're poking through that top layer.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So now you're poking a hole in the top layer so that you can see through the lower layer. So I poked a hole in the picture of the slow shutter speed. I poke a hole in that picture so that when I put a picture behind it of the good duck shows through.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Right, right, right. That makes sense. As soon as you start talking about white and black and actually MacFun does the exact same thing. It's black and white and you're racing with one and adding back in with the other. But somehow the way they did it, it just immediately sunk into me how to make it happen.
Well, and the reason I think of it that way, I think of it as a white piece of paper and black is poking a hole in it.
Okay.
And if you go if you want to do the reverse, so you start with black and now the white
is painting it in.
White is painting it in or covering it up. It's blocking it. So that for my brain, it helps me think of, and a lot of times you're doing this, you're painting with black to poke a hole. That's how I think of it.
Yeah. MacFun does it with an eraser and a brush. So if you're brushing it in, you're using the brush. And if you're erasing it, you use the eraser. So it would show black and white, but you don't have to think, or right. White and black.
Right.
But you don't have to know. All right. We've probably thrown everybody else off the board. They're like, what duck?
We've totally turned this into a... So final step is you feather your edges so that it kind of blends in. You don't see the sharp edges. You import it back into Lightroom and do your final edits, and the result is the image that you're going to show, and the image that I shared out, which is the picture of the duck sitting on a log in the middle of a flowing stream, and the duck is not soft, the log is not soft, and that's how I did it. It's done as a composite, and sort of, and I really like it.
I brought this one up because I really like it too. I think that it. It captures some of the enormity of the falls, but it does it in a way that's got some softness to it. It's a beautiful capture. Now knowing how you did it doesn't make it less cool. It makes it a little more cool to me.
I was hoping that would be the case because it's kind of hard. It's sort of like, do you give away the secret here? And it's like, no, it's not really a secret. I think it still looks like a good image. And I'm sure, you know, if you poke around and, you know, people that do better Photoshop could tell me how to do a better job of this. But for me, I was really happy with it. And
you know, Richard Feynman was accused of ruining the beauty of nature because he would explain it. And he said, no, it's like 100 times cooler when you understand how it happens. I mean, the way a rainbow works, you know, how the right. cellular structure in a leaf works makes it even more amazing. And I've always felt that was true.
And for me, it's pride, I guess. It's ego. You say, hey, look at this. Look what I created.
Oh, God. We got his head all swole up now. Yeah, I knew this was a mistake.
I know it. But kind of going back to what, you know, kind of what pushed us to this topic was, and I don't want people to think this is really hard, but the issue was coming up with something unique. The situation presented to me, and you know, the picture, I think the picture that you show of the duck on the log that doesn't have the slow water is still kind of a neat image. I think it's still kind of unique because it still captures that idea of the duck there, but combining it with the waterfall, I just think makes it a really compelling image. There's more art involved here because it just changes the way that it changes the feel, it changes the mood, and that's sort of the idea, which is taking the situation, taking the elements, thinking like a photographer. And I mean, I thought about the idea, hey, I'm going to turn this into a composite. So I did the best that I could do getting myself into position and thinking about it. And I knew that I was going to try this. So it wasn't an accident. It was something that I planned for. And I'm really happy that I was successful at it. And it, like I say, it wasn't an accident. And that's, I think that's the point, which is thinking about it.
Let's take another angle now. We talked at the beginning about the Tulip Festival, and I submitted this question to Let's Talk Photography but I think you weren't on when they answered it on Let's Talk Photography, and I was really hoping you would, because it was a flower-related question. I've got around me these amazing flowers called Birds of Paradise. They're incredibly flamboyant. They look like birds. They've got orange and yellow and purple, and they're spiky, and they grow in giant clumps. They grow by, you know, people have trimmed them so you can get one alone, but we can see a ton of them together. And I have probably taken 40 photos. I sent in to Bart a little collage of a whole bunch of photos of them that I've taken, and not a single photo I have ever taken is something I would want to show to anybody. It's just like, well, that looks flat. I've taken it from the side. I've taken it from below. I've tried to take it with the sun through it. I've tried to take it nose on. I've done a shallow depth of field. I've done a long depth of field. I cannot get a photograph of that flower to save my soul. So you're taking pictures of tulips that everybody on earth takes pictures of, and yet your photos are compelling. They're breathtaking.
Thank you.
Don't get your head swole up again.
Too
late.
Just a second. I'm writing down the date and the time.
That I accidentally gave you a compliment.
Complimented me. Well, thank you. I think that, and this is, I think a couple things. Number one is practice.
I don't want it to be work. Just tell me the answer.
I live and work there. So I get to take, I haven't shown you the thousands of awful tulip pictures that I've taken. you only get to see the small percentage of good pictures that I take. So that's I don't consider myself a expert photographer in any stretch. I've mentioned lots of people have helped me. I think also I didn't mention Antonio Rosario really kind of took me under his wing and has really helped me a lot. But the thing that has really pushed me to be better is to shoot a lot. And I think that that's what I would tell anybody, which is shoot a lot. And all of these things that I have sort of picked up along the way are things that it's not because I went to a special school or that there's any special answer. It's because I've shot a lot and sort of learn, oh, hey, look, that worked. So that's number one, is shoot a lot.
Okay.
And you said you've shot the bird of paradise a whole bunch of times and not been successful, but I think you finally got one, didn't you?
Nope.
Still working on it?
Nope. I'm close to giving up, Mark. I've taken so many. One problem is that some of them are nasty looking, and the nasty looking ones are kind of interesting too, because as they die, they tend to look like these kind of creepy old men. They get this like scraggly beard, brown looking thing. But you'll get a really beautiful one up against that. I'm thinking, man, I ought to be able to do some juxtaposition of the young and the old, or, you know, something. But I just, like, a lot of times the sun is coming beautifully through them. And that's my favorite thing, like in the early evening, and you've got the, you know, low light coming through as the sun is setting, and it bright lightens up that gold. And I get just awful pictures when I do that. I haven't ever controlled the exposure properly, I think.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to give you some tips. It might help everybody listening, but it won't help you, just because there's no help. There's just nothing that we can do to get you to take a good picture of a bird of paradise. But I'll try anyway.
All right. So start by taking pictures at high noon.
When the light is at its absolute worst.
Harshest as possible.
Harshest, terrible, yeah.
Stare straight into the sun.
I didn't put this on my notes, but actually... overcast days are great for tulips.
Yeah, we don't have
for
those.
Flowers. Oh, that's right. I forgot.
We have sunshine.
We always, okay.
Or right, like I tell Bart, we have one of two things. We have cloud or sky. We don't, he's got these beautiful puffy white clouds. We have cloud or no cloud. We don't have clouds.
You know, there's absolutely nothing that you can say that's going to make me feel sorry for you. You can try all you want.
It's not a photographer's dream, that's for sure.
No. So, well, let me get back to my tulips and okay. some of the things that I've learned taking tulip pictures. And again, I'll draw a picture for people of what we're talking about at the tulip fields. We're not talking about, you know, like a garden tulip that's, you know, out in your front yard. The tulip fields in Skagit Valley are farms, are a big expanse of tulips, and they go, gosh, I don't know.
As far as the eye can see.
I'm terrible with measurements, but, you know, just big long rows of tulips, and there's usually, I don't know, 30 rows of a color, and then right next to that will be 30 rows. So you might have 30 rows of red and 30 rows of yellow right next to that, and 30 rows of pink right next to that, and purple and whatever. So, and as a tourist, when you go there, the thing that is most striking about this is it looks like somebody took a giant paintbrush and just painted the ground. It's just, as far as you can see, a stripe of color, and it's just overwhelming. It is just beautiful. But it's really hard to take a picture of that, and it's really hard to take a picture of that that doesn't look like everybody else's picture, or with somebody standing in it, or whatever. So what do you do? And how do you, and I sell these things, so I need to come up with something that somebody's going to pay money for and not say, hey, that looks just like the picture I took.
Galaxy S1.
That's right. So I need to do something where somebody actually says, you know, that is so interesting, I'm going to reach into my pocket, take out money, and pay for it. So that was, you know, that's kind of my challenge when I do tulips. So one of my favorite current favorite tulip pictures is one that that I call Early Bloom, and it's a yellow and pink tulip with a blue sky and clouds in the background. And what makes it unique is the composition and how I angled it. So the tip is, change your point of view. Instead of standing, because tulips are only about, I don't know, a foot tall or something like that. And so as a normal human being between 5 and 6 feet tall, everything is down low and you're looking at the tops of all the flowers and you see all the colors.
So think of them as children, where you need to get down on their level to get interesting.
Exactly. Down on their level. So a lot of my favorite pictures of tulips are shot in the mud. When I'm down low, right, get the camera lens right down into the image. And this one is one of my favorites. I think it's because of the colors that I got and the sky and so forth. But the camera lens is right at their level, kind of looking up so that I'm getting the sky.
I've noticed one thing you're doing that I think works really well too here that I haven't done. I'm a big fan of the really strong bokeh, the fuzzy background with a super crisp image in front. So I tend to open up my aperture so wide that everything is blurry. What you've done is it's just very gradually getting blurry. It's not like it's all fuzzy in the background. Is if you go back a couple of tulips, you can still clearly identify the pieces of it, and even the mountain in the background is blurry but not super fuzzy, right? So you've still got enough depth of field that it's not as I don't know, in your face.
And I think that's kind of important, because I'm still trying to convey to the person looking at this that I am at a tulip field. This is not.
Right, they're
just
going and going and going and going and going.
Yeah, it's not just a flower in somebody's front yard, but look, there's a whole bunch of tulips the same color, and it's as far as you can see back into the picture. But that's not the
focus. And they escape out of the sides too, so you can tell that had you had a wider angle, there would have been even more. So you can feel that there's that width and the depth going on.
So with the change of point of view and having that stuff kind of stay in focus and go to the edges like that, you get that feeling. It conveys the feeling of the flowers. And I also, because I'm right down there, it seems like I'm taking a picture of a lot of stuff, but really I'm not. And the fact that there's people standing all around me, and there's probably people on the other side of the flowers there, but you don't see any of them because I've controlled that point of view.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have to worry about the zillions of people all around me.
Yeah.
So I think number one tip, change your angle, change your point of view, and you're going to get something more unique.
I have definitely tried that again with those pesky birds of paradise. I haven't gotten there yet.
Okay. Well, then let's try tip number two.
Okay.
Tip number two is open your eyes, be observant. And the duck picture that we talked about at the beginning of the show is an example of that. I'm standing with all these people at the edge of the way where we're standing is right at the edge of one of the falls. So, you know, the falls are just a couple feet away. And everybody is looking at and paying attention to this massive amount of water going over. But for a second, I opened my eyes, became observant, and went, look at that. There's a duck sitting right there. And I don't think people were necessarily paying attention to the little stuff. They were paying attention to the big stuff.
And the big was so big.
The big is so big and so overwhelming. So if you take a second, be observant, look around, open your eyes. That's what I say. You might see something. So that, for me, that's the duck on the log. But in the tulips, one of the earliest tulip pictures that I took that I really thought, oh, that's unique. That was something good. That's something that I haven't seen a lot, is one that I call, I named it Overachiever. And most of the tulips all grow. They group them by color. So all the red ones are growing in a row. All the purple ones are in a row. All the yellow ones are in a row. But every now and then, and I'm not a botanist, I don't know how this works, but every now and then, a flower does something a little bit unusual. And in this picture, it's a row of red tulips, but there's one tulip there that's half red, half yellow. You know, the reason I named it Overachiever was I sort of imagined this kid who says, how am I going to stand out? I want people to notice me.
I just want to be me.
It's really hard. It says, poof, look, I'm half yellow. So
you watch too many Disney movies.
I know. Grandkids and all. So anyway, for the image you're getting, and you still get the bokeh like you were describing, but you can tell there's this basically everything in the picture. So the sky is blue. Everything else is red or green except this one blob of yellow, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like that's unique. It conveys a picture.
You also really drew the focus to that. Now, this is a case of where you did do a much shallower depth of field, where pretty much the only one that's in focus is the overachiever. All the others, a few are a little bit in the foreground. Everything else is way in the background, but you get this sense of the sea of red with this one yellow overachiever.
Yep. And that's because of, you know, that's, you're right. It's because use the depth of field that I chose and the angle, that's really the only one that's being focused on, and the angle, there's nothing else on its plane really. Everything else is in front of it or behind it.
Yeah.
Even the two closest to it, one of them's in front, one of them's in back. That's really the only one at that plane, pretty much.
So this again was a case of using your eyes.
It's a case of using my eyes, because it was pretty easy to stand there and see this big sweep of red, and I mm-hmm. could have taken a picture of the big sweep of red, but I opened my eyes, looked down, and said, there's one flower that's standing out that's yellow, and then, you know, composed it in a way to make that one stand out. Right. And I don't, you talked about maybe doing a juxtaposition with the sort of the dead one and the living one of the birds of paradise. That might sort of be an example of that. You know, looking for the unique situation and opening your eyes.
Okay.
So, next tip, and I think this might one also apply to your birds of paradise thing, but that is be aware of the background and the surroundings. So, one of the problems with the tulip fields, and this would be true of a lot of tourist locations. This was true at Niagara Falls. Because, you know, there's buildings or there's walking paths or railings or whatever everywhere. But you really think like a photographer and think about what's in the background. It's too easy to sort of look at the flowers, take a picture of the flowers, and then get home and realize, oh, there was a ugly truck in the background, or oh, look at there, I didn't notice that porta potty sitting there.
Indoors it'll be an outlet.
Yeah, an outlet, or, you know,
a friend of mine is an artist, and he draws these really crazy creepy creatures, but he draws them indoors, and he always draws an outlet in the picture
because they're always there, right?
Yeah,
he
adds it back in for the weirdness.
And you get this with wires and things like that. And it's sometimes pretty difficult at these tourist locations because the location that they allow you to shoot at is pretty controlled, and there's really no way to get around it. So think about it. Sometimes you can incorporate it. So that I gave you one that I call Tulips in the Backyard or something like yes. that. And it, the house is there, the building's there, but it's, I've controlled for it by blurring it, doing the bokeh. And I think that it, you know, it creates a nice background. It creates the environment, but I controlled for it instead.
So what he's got is a sea of these pink tulips with this old barn house with a green algae covered roof. And it just really makes it very, very interesting. And again, shows how many of these silly flowers there are.
But you think about it, right? Instead of making sure before you push the shutter, think about where you're at and make sure, you know, you don't have the porta potty or the outlet or whatever. But incorporate it. And instead of looking for the impossible, which is totally avoiding it, try to figure out how to incorporate it. And that sort of goes to my other tip, which is a lot of times you can't avoid people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, hey, you're in a place where there's lots of...
Can't just yell at them and tell them to leave?
Hey, get out of there! Sometimes I incorporate the people. I didn't share an image with you, but at Niagara Falls, one of the pictures, a couple of the pictures that I've taken, you know, there's the tour boat, the boat that's down in the water. It's the Maid of the Mist. It goes yes. actually right up next to the waterfalls. I used it to give some scale.
Was very effective.
Yeah, instead of waiting for the boat not to be there, I actually did the opposite. I waited for the boat to come and be in a position that I thought, you know, compositionally it worked, and mm-hmm. took several pictures of it because, hey, there's people here. There's tourists. This boat, you know, look at that boat with, you know, I don't know how many people are on it, but it gave scale because you can look at that and say, oh my God, the falls must be huge because that boat is just so tiny.
right. I thought that was really effective. So that was on purpose, not just that it was in your way?
It was absolutely on purpose. Yeah, because there's big, long times when the boats aren't there. I actually waited for the boat to show up.
You have another one you call Visiting Tulips that we'll show where you've got... the tulips in the foreground, but you can see people photographing the tours in the back, the tulips in the background.
Yeah. And what I liked about this one, I would have thrown it away, but I looked at it and I kept it because what I liked about it, and I don't know who these people are. And I just imagine cause you can't see them. So I just imagine these two little old ladies in there because they got the broad rimmed hat, the big hats. And, I don't know. I just kind of imagine these people out in the garden down looking at the flowers and I left them in there because I incorporated them in. I thought it gave something to the picture to have them be
in
there.
It also takes a little while to notice them because the tulips are very dramatic in the front and they're very crisply focused and the light is coming through them beautifully. So your eye is drawn to that, but the longer you look at it, that's when you start to realize there's something more going in the background. And I think that photographs that cause you to sort of discover the story at the longer you look at it are more compelling.
And it pulls you back into it because they're if you think of the picture being front to back, the focus is on the flowers in the front, but because those people are in the back of the picture, it pulls you through and I think it gives depth to the picture as well.
Yeah. And in this case, it shows you what they're looking at.
Yeah, exactly. Again. Yeah. So, you know, that I don't have a lot of those at the tulip fields, but, you know, imagine if you're there with, you're there with a kid and you have them get back down, have them get down in the flowers or sniff the flowers or, you know, a pet or something like that. Actually incorporating the life into what you see there, I think will makes the pictures more interesting.
All right. You have a final tip for us?
Yeah. Final tip. Go when nobody else is there.
When is that? Is that in January?
Yeah, no. So for the tulips, it's been go early, go at sunrise. I have one of the early pictures I think I shared with you the sunrise picture, but another one that I did was really early in the morning before anybody has shown up, and it was the air was still all misty and cloudy. But the one that I'm really happy with, and the one that I shared with you, is one at sunrise. And this is another example of think like a photographer, maybe live like a photographer. And that is
that's from Victor. Victor's the one that makes you get up at the crack of dawn or before.
Get up at the crack of dawn. And the funny thing about that is that I resisted that for many years. I belong to some camera groups here in the area, and they would couple of years they would get together and they'd say, oh, let's go up at sunrise, and I would never do it. They were going up on Saturday and they were going to get up really early, and I had the opportunity, I could go anytime I wanted because I work up there, so I could go any day. It's like, I'm not going to do that. I'll just go take pictures when it's more convenient for me. A couple of years ago, Jeff Carlson, who is a photographer, he writes for the Seattle Times. He writes books for Peach Pit. I'm not sure. I'm probably promoting the wrong publisher for him. I'm sorry, Jeff. But I met him down at Macworld, and we started. He lives here in the Seattle area, so we met at Macworld, and after that, visited with each other and communicated. And that one year he contacted me and he said, hey, I think I'm going to come up and take pictures of the tulips at sunrise. Where should I go? And I'm like, I have no
idea.
You
had to confess you had never done it.
I've never done it. But I'll tell you where the fields are. I'll tell you where some good fields are. So I told him, where he could go. And because the fields move around every year. They grow in different locations because they have to rotate the crops. I think it's every 3 or 4 years. So different fields are growing every year. So I told him which fields I thought he would be able to get some good pictures of. And some of the fields you can't get to until the place opens. So you have to find a public field where you can walk up to it. So I told him where to go. And then I thought about it and thought, maybe I'll go up there. So I actually went up and met him the time that I'm taking these pictures. And then I was like, hey, this is a pretty good idea. I got some really good pictures. There's nobody there. The only people there were photographers, basically. And photographers are usually pretty polite as far as trying not to step into each other's image or whatever. So I ended up getting a whole bunch of pictures, and actually he took a picture of me taking pictures. So I have proof that I was there on sunrise taking that picture. So
it gets back to your theme, think like a photographer.
Think like a photographer.
Maybe even do like a photographer, not just think about it.
Not just think about it. Actually pack your stuff, get up early. It was worth it. It was just totally worth it. It's an experience that I'll always remember, and I'll go do it again. I'm sure I didn't get to do that at Niagara Falls. I did see some pictures online after I was there of some really cool sunrise pictures, and now I'm like, oh, I should have done that. But I was there for work, right? So I was actually in meetings and stuff. So.
You had to go a little bit of a meeting to justify the trip.
I actually had to go, yeah. So,
all right, well, this has been really helpful. Maybe I should get up at sunrise and see if I can get a picture of those gosh darn birds of paradise.
Well, I don't know if I can do anything to help you, but apparently that's the one thing you haven't tried is shooting at a different time of day. So.
That's probably it. All right, Mark, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Tell people again how they can see your work. We'll have a link to these photos.
Yes.
That we've been talking about. So how can they find your work?
So my work is at twinlakesimages.com.
Uh-huh.
And all of my galleries are there. They're separated out. I do some blogging there. Not as much as I should, but I do some blogging. And the most recent blog I think I did was shared some pictures that I took at Niagara Falls and some of the why I took some of the pictures that I took. You can also find me at Flickr as SwitcherMark. And I'm on Twitter now as TLI_Mark.
All right. Thanks again, Mark. I really appreciate you coming out and being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond. This is an unsponsored show, so if you like what you hear, you can help support the show by using the Amazon affiliate link over on podfeet.com. Heck, put a review up on iTunes and tell your friends about the podcast too. I love feedback, so please do write to me at allison@podfeet.com and join in the conversation with other listeners in our Google Plus community at podfeet.com/Google Plus. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.